the VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 563, recorded on February 11th, 2020.
Third edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 396th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonathan Allen.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, we're getting close to a milestone, at least. I don't know how many people have listened to all 400 episodes of the VGRT, but it'll be interesting to see if there's anybody who's been that loyal. Who's listened to every single episode?
I don't know. It might be someone. Yeah. I think that we've had some listeners that have been around for a long time.
Yeah. Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing the game CrossCode. It's a bit like a Link adventure kind of game where it has puzzles, and you're playing in this world that's this MMO, but really it's, you know, single player, you're playing by yourself, but it's structured like it's an MMO, and you get this class, you're a spheromancer, and you throw these little balls all over the place, and you have an aiming device to, you know, make those more powerful, but you also have a melee attack, and the graphics in the game just remind me a lot of Sega Genesis.
People say SNES, actually. I think of it as more of SNES-type graphics.
I don't know. There's just something Genesis about it. I don't know. Just reminds me
of
Fantasy Star.
It was developed by... what's their name again? I mean, which version are you playing, by the way? Because there's a Steam version, there's a PS4 version.
Steam version.
Which one is this?
CrossCode. It's a retro-style 2D action RPG with retro graphics.
Yeah.
It was actually released a while ago. It was just released on Windows like 2 years ago, but it's just been released on PlayStation, Switch, and Xbox.
Right.
So. It was developed by Radical Fish and published by Deck 13.
Mm-hmm. And I think they've done a good job. I mean, the music is fun, and I'm interested in the story. See what's going on with the characters. You start out your character is an avatar, and there's someone in the real world playing like,
yeah, this is a very meta game because you're playing a character named Leah, and she's inside an MMORPG.
And there's a lot of animes that are like this, like Sword Art Online or Overlord, where a character in the real world is stuck in the video game, basically, and that's what your character is.
Which is, every character is based on a console.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I can't believe that you jumped to Sword Art Online before Dot Hack.
Oh, I forgot about that. there's other games like it.
Yeah, and I forgot. What was the name of the game that every character is based on a console?
Was that the game that you play an RPG and it's like evolving? As you get level up, the game evolves. You get like colors and 3D graphics, and it just like starts going from one point in history to another. I just can't remember what it was called.
I'm trying to remember the name of that damn game. Neptune. Oh wait, Neptune something. Hyperdimension Neptunia.
Okay.
Yeah, all the characters in that game are based on consoles. And it's funny because the name of the game, Neptunia, is based on a Sega console that was never released.
No.
Neptune. The Neptune. I mean, you have the Sega Saturn, you have the Sega Neptune.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that name thing makes sense. Yeah, I could see that. But, yeah, this is a fun game. like I said, there's lots of puzzles, lots of action. It's very fast paced, and yeah, good music, good soundtrack, and it's really just kind of fun.
The immediate vibe I get off of it is Secret of Mana. Like, it looks very Secret of Mana to me.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. I was saying, like, when I look at it, the top-down view, it looks like the first Secret of Mana, very much so.
Right, and you do get a party, so, and they act as NPCs. You can give them AI commands to do certain actions. So yeah, I could see that.
God, there was a cartoon based on Hyperdimension Neptunia. Or an anime, anyway.
So, yeah, I'm very early in that game, but I'm enjoying it. It's fun. That's what I've been playing.
Okay. How about you, TJ?
Oh, I jumped back into Apex Legends with the new season just launched, and they launched a new weapon, and they launched a new character. I haven't played in a while, so it was a little rusty for me to jump back in there. I feel like Titanfall's style of shooting is maybe the easiest, most accessible style of first-person shooting out there. Like, it's so fluid and smooth, the way the movement and the sliding and everything works. I really enjoy how Apex Legends and the Titanfall games control as first-person shooters. And I know there's some level of that in, like, Call of Duty, the futuristic Call of Duties, but I think it's also, like, there's a little bit of chintzy arcade-ness in the Call of Duty shooters that Titanfall kind of actually manages to stay away from. Like, Titanfall feels stylish without feeling cheap.
I mean, I really enjoy playing Titanfall and Titanfall 2. The only problem I had with Titanfall 2 is that it got it to a point in the single player campaign, which I just could not get past.
Mm. Yeah, I really do enjoy it. Like, it's the new character is really fun. They made it, like, they really have come into their own in, like, how they design the, like, each of the characters feels really different and fills a really nice niche from each other. The new one, Revenant, he has this thing where he can drop a death totem and everyone can touch it, and then if they run off and get killed, they'll respawn back at the death totem with just a touch of health. So it makes scouting and poking at enemy teams really easy. Like, well, you still end up, like, if they know where the death totem is, they can get the drop on you and kill you while you have a sliver of health left. But it really does sort of make it made me and my teammates feel braver about, like, touching that thing and then going and attacking someone without fear of death. So, like, I really do like what they've been doing with Apex Legends. Plus, they're doing events all the time now. They've got a Valentine's Day event coming up that's going to be duos, which is just kind of cute. And they're doing, like, I think they've done events like every single holiday now. It's cool how much they're finally, like, when Apex Legends first came out, it was, like, really kind of getting boring after that initial flash in the pan. And now they're coming up with, like, new stuff to do just about every month or so, which is great.
Okay. Before I tell you what I've been playing, I noticed on my activity feed that friends are abandoning Garden Warfare Battle for Neighborsville and have started playing Garden Warfare 2, which makes me feel justified in saying that the third Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare game just sucks. And people are going back to the second one. So I hope that sends a message. The other thing is that I've been playing Shadow of War again, because I'm doing the Desolation... I'm trying to 100% it. So I'm doing the Desolation of... The Baranor DLC, which is basically it's sort of like a roguelike in which if you die before you complete the mission, you have to start all over again. from scratch.
That's a bummer.
Well, I mean, on the first few levels, I'm playing on Gravewalker difficulty, which means you have no last chance, which means if you don't have someone rescue you, that's it, you know. And there's so many bullshit ways for you to die. I mean, if a Drake appears and firebombs your ass, you die. Guess what? Tough luck. It's like the game rolls the dice and said, oh, guess what? I rolled a 2. You lose. So I learned a way out of that. I'm now cheating. And I found a way to cheat, and that is what is known as rage quitting. So the second my guy is about to die, or he's in the death animation, I just quit the game and start it again. And it just goes from back where I started, from the last save, because it saves every time an enemy dies, or you die. And if you die, then it just, you know, resets you. So I've been just doing that, and I kept on doing that until I got items that make me powerful enough that I don't have to rage quit as much. For instance, I got one artifact which says if you would die, one of your bodyguards will just let him will intercept it and get himself killed, which is actually kind of painful because there's a limited number of people you can hire. But I got two of them, which made the game a lot easier, even though it's on Gravewalker. One makes it so that I have 250 additional damage when stealth killing. And another that doubles the stealth damage, or adds a bunch of stealth damage, if I do it from a glider. So all I'm doing is I'm in a glider, I just find someone. So long as they're not immune to stealth attacks, I just drop on their ass and kill them. So I'm slowly but surely getting to the end, and every time I might die, I just rage quit and start over again. So there's no way I can possibly lose. I just want to get that final artifact, which you get for defeating the Desolation of Mordor, or whatever, the Baranor DLC, and also the achievement, and so I never have to do that ever again. Huh. And that's a bad thing, because, you know, the thing is that when you play a roguelike, or you play something like this, you have to adjust it a little bit so that it isn't random. You know, I'd like to think that I die because I'm not skilled enough, but it's not skill, it's just a random bad roll. So, I mean, in Dark Souls, if you die, it's not like, oh, well, you know, the game cheated or anything. No, you screwed up. And you know how you screwed up. Same thing with Cuphead. No matter how hard it is, you can always say, oh, well, that was my fault.
Mm-hmm.
If it's random and you just get your ass randomly killed, it's not your fault. It's bad design.
Yeah, and I would even go as far as to say, if the game is good enough, then you won't mind. Like,
oh, well, I don't mind on the other levels. But here, on Gravewalker, with this game mode, I do mind, and it's frustrating. And the fact that I'm still trying to do it says something, you know. And the fact that I found a way to cheat and just get past that says something. I'll play it again, but I'll play it on Nemesis mode, where at least you get a last chance. So. And when I'm doing it on Nemesis, I'll be doing it for speed, see how fast I can complete it, see if I can speed run it.
Yeah, I mean, like when it comes to games like Dead, I would say that games like Dead Cells and Rogue Legacy, those are that kind of game where it's like roguelike and you'll die constantly. But I think that, like, they're fun enough that you won't mind.
Here's the other thing. A lot of roguelikes, when you die, it just snaps its fingers and it starts you at the beginning right away. Like, if you die in FTL, guess what? You can just go start a new game immediately. There's so much waiting after you die in Desolation that, you know, it's a pain. You know, well, wait a minute, or not a minute, but, you know, here's your score, here's a thing, and all that stuff, and then you have to equip all the starter artifacts again. That's the painful part. You know, at least if you die in a roguelike, usually, you know, if you do Spelunky, you know, you die, guess what? You just jump right back in, like, 2 seconds later. So, like I said, I might play on Gravewalker again, but already having conquered it, it'll be sort of like, let's see how I can do it without cheating. But I am unabashedly cheating now.
Yeah.
I've also
Go ahead. That's a bummer. Go ahead.
I've also gotten back into Town of Salem. For those of you who don't know, if you ever played Werewolf, that's what Town of Salem is. Just with a crap ton
of Mafia.
And here's the thing that's really pleased me. All the cheaters are fucking gone. That was the thing that really drove me nuts playing Town of Salem like 2 or 3 years ago. And I know Dan plays it too. Dan Quick, who used to be on the podcast. He plays it too, and I told him, guess what? There's nobody cheating, so I'd love to play Town of Salem again. I have to learn a crap ton of new roles. I even may buy the DLC, which adds even more roles. Since I have to relearn all the roles, I kind of suck, even though I maintained my my ranking in multiplayer, in ranked matches. Because I know how to play all those. I know how to play Werewolf. I know how to play Resistance. I know how to play Avalon, you know. If there's a hidden role trader game, I know it. So the fact that Town of Salem has been fixed makes me feel really, really, really good. Because when you have people cheating, you know, people sharing computers or whatever, that just it ruins the game. You know, I know you want to win, but half the fun is finding out that your friend was actually on the other side the entire time. You know, it's the entire fun of the game is finding out who's the traitor and who's not. And when you start sending information that you shouldn't be sending information about, it just robs all the fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Town of Salem, it's a cheap game. I play it on Steam, but it's also, I hear, on iPad and Android. And it is that sort of game. You know, it does have that... I don't know if it's free on iOS, Android, but it has that feel. Because there's a lot of microtransactions. At least on Steam, I earn the gold, so I can buy the stuff. And I have a lot of I have a lot of currency, elite currency that I haven't spent yet. So I'll see when I want to spend it. But yeah, Town of Salem, it's like one of those games you just play quick, you know. And yeah, there's new roles that. Here's the other thing that bothers me about that game. A lot of people rage quit after they're killed or lynched or whatever. And there's some roles in which you can actually talk to the dead so that there's a reason for you to stick around, aside from getting the bonus. Because I know a lot of people just leave the game, and that ruins it for me. Because one of the fun things about the game is talking with the other dead people and commenting on everything that's going on during the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like werewolf type games, try Town of Salem. It's one of the few that it managed to capture the feel. And here's the thing: in real life, I don't like werewolf because elimination. You know, games like Resistance, you know, there's no elimination. In werewolf, you have elimination. If someone lynches you or werewolf kills you, you're out of the game. So, but Town of Salem makes it painless. There's also some fun animations. Normally, you get hanged in a noose, you know, in the center of town. I elected so that my death animation is that a meteor comes and squishes me. It just comes out of the sky and just goes plop. It always makes me laugh. Yeah. I've also been playing Slay the Spire, and oh yes, I've gotten my Mixer account running, and since I have a more powerful computer and a fast connection, I've started streaming my games. So if you want to watch me, it's mixer.com/Jonah_Falcon. And you can watch me playing on Mixer.
Cool.
And you can... Have either of you been playing Slay the Spire?
No. I
have played, yes. Slay the Spire, yes.
So TJ, if I'm playing Slay the Spire, you can watch me play.
I saw the new character got added. What do y'all think of the new character?
I what's it called? I didn't know that the download had happened yet for it.
So it's like some sort of Oracle, right? Like she's got a.
Well, it's a she. I mean, all the other characters are male, so the fact that it's a she is something different.
Yeah, let me look this up. I did the news story,
but yeah, I haven't gotten to play as the new character yet. As a matter of fact, I've been busy leveling up my other characters, because I got it. On Windows 10, which is a lot more convenient for me than playing it on the Xbox, because at least on the Xbox, you know, I watch TV or I watch YouTube videos, so I play it now on Windows 10, and I'm just leveling up all of them, because in order to get all the artifacts, you have to level them up to the max, so yeah. I've been doing that.
Have you played the new character, Scott?
I have not. I only played a little bit of it, you know, several months ago. But I did enjoy it, and I thought it was interesting mechanic. You know, you build your deck, and it's different every time. It's, I guess, roguelike in a way.
No, it is a roguelike. Yes, definitely a roguelike.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I usually like to have one build for the characters I do, but sometimes you won't get that because when I'm playing the Silent, I usually like to do the poison build.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not often. Okay, the new character on the Windows 10 version isn't available yet. I don't know if they've released it yet. I mean, the last patch notes I see here are for July 5th, 2019. So
there was there was one on Steam, which was January 14th, and that was this year.
On Steam yet,
so that was the Watcher.
If it's been released on Steam, I haven't played it yet.
So that was the Watcher, and she has a whole bunch of different stances. And also a seeing staff. I don't know what that means, but they also did a whole bunch of different things with the potion lab, where I guess once you've crafted a potion before, you can actually see all the ingredients for it and stuff. Which I hear, which sounds like it would be really convenient.
Yeah,
it sounds like she's blind.
I'm looking at her, and she's blue. She has blue eyes. And,
she'll be blind and have blue eyes.
Okay, so she has stances. Yeah, like one stance is Wrath, and this stance, you deal and receive double attack damage. Okay, so basically, I'm guessing there's one that doubles your attack. There's one that doubles your defense. There's one that doubles, doubles your maybe your energy. I don't know. It isn't available yet on Windows 10 or Xbox, so she'll arrive on it. Eventually. I'm not in a big rush, and I'm still trying to level up the other characters anyway. But yeah, I mean, Slay the Spire, and we have to thank the Humbles bundle for it, because it was a Humble Store game. It was financed by Humble Store.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the news items. Microsoft, Amazon, and Google are the main competitors going forward, and this comes to us from The Verge and Forbes magazine. Microsoft's head of gaming and Xbox, Phil Spencer, has revealed that the company sees Amazon and Google as its main in competition for the future. Speaking in an interview with a newly launched technology publication, Protocol, Spencer dismisses Sony and Nintendo's ability to create a cloud infrastructure that will challenge Microsoft, Google, or Amazon. When you talk about Nintendo and Sony, we have a lot of respect for them, but we see Amazon and Google as the main competitors going forward. That's not to disrespect. That bothers me, the use of the word disrespect as a verb. You show disrespect. You don't disrespect people. Anyways, I guess it's a neologism, but still. It's like impacted. The only thing that
you could have said you could have said disrespectful to Nintendo and Sony.
But it's like impacted. It's, there's only one thing that can be impacted, and that's a wisdom tooth.
I don't know. That feels like semantics, because you can respect something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but guess what? Irregardless, I misremembered that. No, it doesn't work. You can invent it. Anyways, traditional gaming companies are somewhat out of position. I guess they could try to recreate Azure, which is Microsoft's cloud service. But we've invested tens of billions of dollars in cloud over the years. Microsoft has been realigning its gaming efforts for a future beyond the Xbox console. The software giant's big effort now involves reaching billions of players around the world with cloud gaming. Google has already launched its Stadia service, and it's failed miserably, and Microsoft is trialing its own xCloud streaming service that is set to launch fully later this year. I don't want to be in a fight over format years with those guys while Amazon and Google are focusing on getting gaming to 7 billion people around the world, he said. Ultimately, that's the goal. According to Forbes magazine, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google have data centers. Sony doesn't. Sony is still driven to sell consoles because it can't compete in the cloud. The surprising PS5 reveal in Wired allowed Sony to focus its early next-gen discussion on the console, which dovetailed perfectly with the misperception that the console sales are still the criterion of success. Sony's strong-arm tact of using PS5 exclusives to coerce players into buying a new console. The news that the PS5 pricing may depend on the price of the price points of the Xbox Series X and PlayStation's well-documented resistance to cross-platform play are all signs that PlayStation is still hanging on to the console sales while the games industry has moved on. That really bothers me, by the way. What they mean by that is that Sony is going to stop making games, first-party games for the PS4 entirely when the PS5 is out. They're going to say, we're going to make PS5 games, and if you want to play them, you got to get a PS5. We're not going to make them for the PS4. Well, Microsoft says, yeah, all the games are going to be making first party. You'll be able to play – it'll be much, much better on the Xbox Series X, but you'll be also able to play it on the Xbox One X, the Xbox One S, and the Xbox One. Although I will say this, they also said that if you try to play something like Halo Infinite on the Xbox One, it's going to look primitive in comparison to the other consoles. So, console sales were critical, and this is Forbes magazine saying this. Console sales were critical when the current generation launched in 2013 and PlayStation won that war decisively. But the battleground changed in the intervening years. The money in the cloud is in the cloud now, and Sony doesn't have the cloud infrastructure to compete. The sign was on the wall when Sony and Microsoft announced a partnership last May, allowing Sony to use Microsoft's Azure cloud service for game streaming, which is sort of like Microsoft using the Blu-ray in the Xbox One. It's sort of like them saying, we give up, you know, so... blah, 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 blah. I mean, the rest of it is just posturing. So the thing is that Microsoft is getting all of its money not from necessarily from console sales or game sales, but from the Xbox Game Pass. And what they see is they see it expanding. So not only when you get the Xbox Game Pass, you won't even need the Xbox One Xbox to play them. You'll just play them on your PC. You know, you'll do some sort of weird streaming service. Sort of like the PS Now, except not as bad, you know. And it's interesting, you know, Sony doesn't have the data centers, and that is a major drawback. That's sort of like saying Sony is doing silent films, but they're relying on someone else to put sound in them. You know, the way consoles are changing is quickly. I mean, we've already seen it. I mean, you know, Microsoft said, "Screw it, we're going to make games. We're going to release some of our popular games on the Switch." And they already have Xbox Live in a certain format on the Switch with their games. And they're still negotiating with Nintendo to have Xbox Live because Nintendo's decided, you know what, we don't do online very well. Someone else do it for us, please. You know. So I would not be shocked if in 7 years you have Xbox Live on the PlayStation.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like PlayStation's online service does well enough. I feel like, but like you say, they're not very good when it comes to streaming. PlayStation Now is a joke. I've tried it 2 times, and both times I thought it was absolute trash.
But it isn't just game streaming. Here's the thing. One of the things that they promised, Microsoft promised with Crackdown 3, which never really came to be, was that you'd use the cloud servers to augment the game, you know, that would do the calculations for the destructible buildings. That never came around. I think back in 20 – when they were developing it, not when it was released, back in 2015, it was just – they were not ready for it. Google sort of jumped the gun with Stadia. But here's the thing that was wrong with Google. The major thing, even with the technical problems, what they did not have was a library. And that was the biggest hurdle for a lot of people to go into Stadia. The library sucked. Microsoft does not have that excuse.
Yeah. The xCloud looks like it's going to come out swinging and strong. And they're doing it right, because they're doing it as a beta, where they like slowly roll it out to select people over certain regions, fine-tune all the kinks. Stadia just kind of launched, and because of that, it fell on its face.
And you know what the xCloud can do that'll do better than the Xbox One has done? That's backwards compatibility. Why bother having, you know, compiling the game when you could just have an Xbox, an original Xbox, or an Xbox 360 just running the games and just streaming it from them, from Microsoft, so you can have perfect backwards compatibility. Imagine them including it in the Game Pass. Yeah, you know what? Every single original Xbox game and every single Xbox 360 game will be available on Game Pass. Can you imagine how people would react to that?
Yeah, that would be wildly good. I do take note of Phil Spencer's like his stance on like the way he put it with Sony and Nintendo is that like it's not even that
he's more interested in partnering with them than actually competing. Remember Nintendo, like 3 or 4 years ago, remember what they said. They said the Xbox and the PlayStation are not our main competitors. Our main competitors are iOS and Android.
Right. And, like, the fact of the matter is that, like, Google and Amazon are bigger fish to fry. Yes, Google fell on its face with Stadia. Yes, Amazon has, like, kind of – New World is kind of garbage. Like, the things that Amazon is working right now on right now are not very – the things that Google and Amazon are working on right now are kind of floundering because they haven't worked in this space for a long time.
And you want to see what Apple's been doing with their – thing. I mean, it wasn't even mentioned, but, you know, Untitled Goose Game and all those other games, they started out with the Apple service, you know.
Apple Arcade was genius. It was good. It was real good. And that's the fact, is that Google and Amazon have oodles and oodles of money. They have billions and trillions of dollars. They won't flounder forever. They'll eventually get it right, and when they do...
The biggest problem with those two services is that they didn't get in on the games from the ground floor. They don't have a library, and they have to. And I would not be shocked if Amazon or Google looked at Sony or Nintendo and said, "Hey, you wanna jump in on this train? You partner with us." You know, I mean, here's the thing: Major League Baseball decided they weren't going to make RBI Baseball anymore. They just told Sony, "You know what? You better make MLB The Show for every single console, or we're just going to give this shit to Electronic Arts and Konami." And you don't think that they, and 2K, you think they don't want to make a baseball game? And Sony is sort of like, okay. Because here's the thing, you know, MLB The Show does not make money for Sony. But the main purpose of MLB The Show is to say, look at this game where the only people making a baseball game that's worth a damn come buy a PlayStation to do it. That's all it is one big advertisement for the Sony console, and it wasn't going to be the field they were going to die on. You know, they said, okay, MLB, we'll because if Electronic Arts starts making baseball, Sony loses money.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, it's Microsoft already shows they don't care because no one complains about the PlayStation version of Minecraft. No one complains about the Switch version of Minecraft. You know, they don't gimp their Minecraft because they're on other consoles. They weren't going to say, well, it's going to be Microsoft only and PC only because, one, that would kneecap. They'll kneecap Minecraft immediately. I mean, there's a reason why Minecraft has had the most sales of any game ever. Even more than Tetris.
Yeah, Nintendo seems to get it. Nintendo and Xbox have been partnering up on a lot of things recently, and I don't think Sony does, because the fact of the matter is, even if Sony did work with Microsoft on like the Azure
they
thing,
they almost did a long time ago.
they are still like just ahead of this news story. It came out that that PlayStation is being sort of is holding their cards to their chest on the price of the PS5.
Yeah, it was in the article.
because they want to see what Xbox does with it first.
But here's the other thing: is that the Xbox One X, Microsoft already knew the cell phone thing with them, you know, by what's it called, due time payments.
Right, but the fact that PlayStation is playing their cards so close to the chest on the price of the PS5 still tells you that even if Microsoft doesn't see them as a competitor, the feeling is not mutual. Sony absolutely still wants to play this game.
If that were true, Sony wouldn't have pulled out of their thing at E3, because, you know, as antiquated as E3 may be, it is still a platform, and giving Microsoft because here's the thing: Microsoft would always go first, and then Sony would respond. You know, and it's still going to be the same, but you know, it's just when you have the cheering crowds, you know, at E3. Sony tried making it smaller. Remember, I don't know if it was last year or the year before. Remember the one in which they showed off Last of Us 2, and, you know, they just showed a few games? That was a disaster. That was a disaster. They flopped hard. And one of the interesting things is that they recently did a poll of the consoles that people say they play the most, and it turns out most people in the United States play the Xbox in nearly every state. Two states had the PC, I believe it was like 23 Xbox, or no, 17 Xbox. I'd have to look at the map, but it was just and like I said, you know, you could say console sales all you want, but the end of the game is money, and Microsoft made the most money because they made a mint on Xbox Game Pass. I did not join Xbox Game Pass until Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, by the way. Because, hey, you know what? Free PC games, too. And it's only going to cost $5 more than just doing Xbox Live Gold. I'm in. I mean, I wouldn't be playing Slay the Spire without it. Oh, yeah. They just released on Game Pass Final Fantasy XV with all the DLC. All of it. So I'm going to play Final Fantasy XV for the first time. So, yeah, The Adventures of the Boy Band. I'm going to start doing that. Oh, come on, they're a boy band, aren't they?
Which ones?
Final Fantasy XV.
Yeah, but they're a wonderful boy band.
I wonder how many women play Final Fantasy XV. It has to be a high percentage. It's like playing One Direction.
It's the best adaptation of what's that? Stephen King movie, Stand By Me.
Oh, by the way, you know, I know that that Final Fantasy XV was actually a different game. I think it was Final Fantasy Series Zero, something Zero, in which it was supposed to be a multiplayer game. And from the combat I've seen, yeah, I can see where it was supposed to be a multiplayer game.
Yeah, I mean, it's still fun. I love the way they adapted eventually, but like, it's the best adaptation of Stand By Me that's ever been made. It's also the best fishing game of the modern console era.
Final Fantasy Type Zero was what Final Fantasy XV was originally.
It's the best cookbook that's ever been produced in gaming.
Well, like I said, they have all the DLC, which is what influenced me to actually download it. I will say this, it took up like 150 gigabytes. It's like, whoa.
Yes. Yeah, it's a chunk. And ultimately, like, it's a lot of different weird things, and I don't think all the pieces fit together all that well sometimes, but I don't know if I'd like it as much if all those pieces weren't there.
Anyways, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what the next generation after this coming one is going to be. 10 years from now, I think the game space will be very different. The only thing, I will have digital games, but I don't know if I want to stream games anyway. I think that's a bridge too far for me. I don't mind having digital games. I do still have some physical games like Red Dead Redemption 2. But only streaming games? No. No, it's too subject to the whims of the publishers. Oh, it's gone now. Tough. Sucks to be you. I don't think that'll ever fully happen because you'll always have indie game makers, you know, and they will always have at least digital games. You're not going to see many streaming games. Speaking of indie developers, go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Stardew Valley creator is working on two new games from PC Gamer. Eric Barone has spent years working on Stardew Valley, shepherding it from Steam greenlit light in 2012 to 10 million copies sold in 2020. Amidst all that, he's also hinted at other projects now and then, although his dedication to Stardew Valley has always taken priority. The last we heard about such things was a little over a year ago, when Barone said that he'd put an unannounced project on hold so he could focus on the farm. But on Twitter today, or rather at the time this was written, he confirmed that the wheels are turning on new games, saying that, yes, I'm actually working on a couple new projects. One takes place in the world of Stardew Valley, but it is not a farming game. The other I'm not 100% sure about the world yet, but it will tie into Stardew Valley in some way. One thing we do know is that it's not Witchbrook, the magical school RPG announced in 2018 by Chucklefish that has been at times wrongly credited to Brown. Chucklefish published Stardew Valley prior to December 2018 and still does on mobile, which occasionally leads to confusion about who makes the game. Barone clarified the nature of the relationship in a 2019 update and clarified today that he is not involved in the development of Witchbrook.
I'm just wondering about, you know, I tried Stardew Valley. It's too much work for me.
It is the best Animal Crossing Harvest Moon game that's not either of those things. Like, it exists in a time when, like, Stardew Valley took up a long period of time where there wasn't an Animal Crossing or a Harvest Moon game that was really all that good. And it's cool that it exists, because now there is Animal Crossing and Harvest Moon games being made again. And I have to think that, to a certain extent, it was because Nintendo saw what Stardew Valley was doing with their formula and was like, man, we're leaving money on the table.
Whoa, what is that? Scott, don't do
that. I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting here waiting for my turn to talk.
I know, but there was noises coming out of your mic.
I have no idea what that was.
Okay. Anyways, you were about to say.
I'm looking very forward to, you know, whatever he's developing, because I enjoyed Stardew Valley, and I remember when I first played it, it felt kind of ironic because I felt pressured to actually perform and make a good farm and talk to all these people, because I didn't have a lot of time. It would be like the day would start, I would do my crops, and then I'd go try to talk to people, and they weren't ready yet, or by the time they were, I was already, you know, low on energy or had to go do all this stuff, and it was like, oh yeah, and your grandpa's coming in a year or two, and I was like, oh crap.
And then you found out you didn't have to do any of that crap.
Yeah. So it was a weird kind of ironic thing, like, oh, we're going to leave the rat race to go join another one, farming rat race. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, it's good music, and yeah, they made a great game, and I'm looking forward to seeing what other game ideas he has, and I like that he's going to tie them into the Stardew Valley world universe, and I don't know.
There are guys who come out with their games, which you really look forward to. I mean, Lucas Pope. I mean, he made Papers, Please, and then he came out with Return of the Obra Dinn. Both completely different games, by the way. They couldn't be more different. And it's sort of like, now you look forward, what is Lucas Pope going to do next?
Right. And I don't know what he'll do now, but it'll be interesting. I guess maybe, I don't know, something, a different kind of simulation game or adventure game.
He said it takes place in the world of here's the thing, it may not even right. be a, here's the thing, it could be an RPG, a straight up RPG, it could be a city builder, it could be, you know, I mean, if you're saying you're making something in the world of Stardew Valley, but it's not a farming game, you know, I don't know, maybe.
Right.
And I would like to see if it's more of a The Sims type game.
I could see it being that. I could also see it being like maybe a co-op dungeon crawler.
Stardew Valley has dungeon crawling in it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, you know, it already has dungeon crawling. You have a little bit of, like, I guess, village restoring, because you have that community center that you have to rebuild, and you're, of course, rebuilding the farm.
Actually, I think it would be hilarious if it was a business sim, since how does Stardew Valley open up? You're tired of the business life, and you just want to get away to the country.
Yeah,
what if the next game is about you having to run a business?
That would be ironic and interesting to see what they did with it.
I'm tired of being on the farm. I want to go to the big city and run a business.
Or run a business in the town. Because, like, you had all these shops.
Big city. Just the total
right.
opposite, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But two games, I mean, who knows? Maybe it'll be his version of Five Nights at Freddy. Who knows?
Oh, no, thank you. Well, thank you.
He was just saying recently that Stardew Valley had actually crossed over 10 million units.
That's awesome. That game definitely deserves it. I like any game that's kind of sandbox in that way. It allows you to be creative and, you know, try different things, and you have your own way of doing what you think is the answer to making a farm. You know, you can make any kind of farm you like.
You know, it reminds me of the $1 Xbox indie games, and one of them was Fortress Craft, that sold over a couple million copies, basically being a clone of Minecraft. People liked Minecraft so much that they actually bought the non-union Mexican equivalent of it, Fortress Craft. What's interesting is when Fortress Craft became a regular game on Steam, it totally ditched the Minecraft aspect and just made it a factory game, which was weird. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Capcom removes De Novo DRM from Devil May Cry 5. This is from PC Gamer. It appears as though Capcom has removed the controversial De Novo DRM from Devil May Cry 5, just shy of a year after its initial PC launch. In a patch release on February 6th and spotted by Reddit user Mustafa Aramaru, De Novo was removed from the game entirely. The DRM has been accused of causing many problems when applied to games, such as degraded performance thanks to high CPU usage and even reducing the lifespan of SSDs.
Yeah, that would really irritate the hell out of me. I mean, solid-state drives are expensive as is, but if you have a game that's actually damaging your solid-state drive, that would just drive me up the wall.
It kind of reminds me of that Full Radiance game that apparently was just literally destroying computers.
Oh. There's one game where the DRM actually formatted the hard drive, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's just insane. I don't know what is wrong with some of these DRMs. While many of these accusations are debatable, DMC5 is unique position of having briefly had two separate builds, one with and one without De Novo, thanks to a hiccup and seems branch management at the game's launch, people were able to compare performance and found the build that did not have De Novo performed on average 25% faster than its DRM-laden counterpart. In real-world terms, that means an improvement about 20 frames per second. In the last few years, De Novo has been used less like a standard DRM and more like a way to stave off early piracy for games. Many publishers decide to use De Novo for the first few months of a game before patching it out at a later date when the rush to torrent the game has died down. Capcom in particular is no stranger to this method, having removed it from Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 7 in the past.
And yet I will guarantee that it did not stop piracy of the game at all.
No. It most likely did not, and probably just drove away people that were actually wanting to buy it legitimately, because they just don't want to deal with stuff like that.
All customers are potential pirates, especially those who purchase the game. I don't know. TJ, wouldn't it drive you up the wall if you found out that your game was reducing the lifespan of your solid-state drive?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I spent a lot of money on my on the stuff that I have, and to have to spend more, like, that would be a super pain in the ass. Plus, I'd have to like go through the. It's not easy to do that with a laptop. So, like, having to bust open my laptop and get in there and mess with things would be just like the worst. Just because of a game, ew.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, that's why on my desktop, I have half a gig of a solid state drive that's the main drive, basically for booting and special software, and then I have a 3 terabyte drive that's a basic hard drive that's for all just storing all my games and all that stuff. You know, yeah, the solid state drive I don't want to. Is there for booting and special things, but when I actually do the playing games or doing anything else, yeah, the 3 terabyte drive is gonna handle it. So I don't know. I still haven't played a Resident Evil 7 yet.
You should. You should play the first 2/3 of Resident Evil 7 and then stop.
I heard that the DLC is awful not in terms of gameplay, but in terms of storytelling.
The last third of the game is also bad.
Well, it is a Resident Evil game. I mean, there's just so long you can play the last house on the left, or last house on the left. That's right. That's the one with Michael Behrman, right?
Yeah.
Or Check Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, but like Resident Evil 7 is so notoriously bad that even me, a fan of like the Resident Evil series, was like, "Man, this fucking sucks. What am I doing?" Like it goes from being a very good atmospheric horror game to being
it remembers it's supposed to be a Resident Evil game.
No, it goes from being an atmospheric scary game to being a action shooter.
I don't know if I'd mind that at all. I know. Well, here's the thing. Resident Evil 3 is coming out soon, so at least you can forget about that.
Yeah, Resident Evil 3 is coming out soon, and I'm so happy for it, because that's, like, easily my favorite entry in the series. And everything I've seen about the new one looks fun. Plus, they're strapping that the Project Resistance thing with it, which is it looks like Resident Evil Outbreak.
It's Left 4 Dead.
It is.
With interactive Left 4 Dead, actually.
I mean, even going further back, it makes me think of Resident Evil Outbreak, which is extremely dope. Just, like, I love the idea. I've always loved the idea of just rando Resident Evil Raccoon City citizens banding together with, like, their own little special skills to try to survive. And I am interested in seeing, like, how that plays. I hope there's good context to it. Like, for those who don't know, Resident Evil Outbreak had, like, full-blown scenarios that you played through. And each of them was like a standalone story as these people are trying to, like, escape the zombie outbreak in Raccoon City. And I really think that's cool, and I really hope that this thing that they're doing with Resident Evil 3 and this multiplayer version isn't just kind of like a strap-on that has no context and is just kind of a cheap little way to play different things on the game.
Well, you know, after that, you know, I guess you can just have to look forward to Resident Evil Code Veronica.
A lot of people are wondering whether or not they'll do Code Veronica first or Resident Evil 4 first.
Well, in order of release, it's Resident Evil 3, Code Veronica, Resident Evil Resident Evil 0, then a Resident Evil Apocalypse, then Resident Evil 4.
A lot of people think that Resident Evil Code Veronica is the weakest entry outside of Resident Evil 6. Resident Evil 4, on the other hand, was super popular. Like, way popular compared to a lot of the games.
Well, the IMDb, score is 8.2 on Resident Evil Code Veronica, so it's not like people hated it.
Yeah. I just feel like out of all the Resident Evils that have come out, like, in that style, I feel like people didn't enjoy Code Veronica as much as the other ones.
Okay. So long as they don't... Well, so long as they don't re-release Resident Evil 6.
We were talking about Devil May Cry. I'm really happy that they removed Denuvo from that, because Devil May Cry is a good game, and more people should be able to enjoy it without it.
Devil May Cry is a good game. Devil May Cry 5 is a good game. I will still roll my eyes at that.
Best soundtrack of 2019, hands down.
Oh, please.
I do like that Johnny, You're an Angel song. That was always good.
There's a lot of songs from that soundtrack that I can just listen to. Like, I find extended cuts of them, and I just listen to them for an hour at a time while I'm working.
Call me crazy, but I can't enjoy a game soundtrack when it just makes me want to toss the monitor out the window. I just could not stand Devil May Cry 5. I played it for 20 minutes, and it was too much. It's the same reason why I didn't like Moulin Rouge, you know? It's like, no, stop! Baz Luhrmann, stop, you're assaulting me. I just watch as far as Sparkling Diamonds medley, then I just shut it off.
I do think that opening cutscene in the game is very fun.
You call it fun? I call it rolling my eyes so hard they might pop out of my skull.
Like, I don't know. We've had this conversation over and over ad nauseum. I think it's the same level of camp as Bayonetta, just in a different direction.
It's no. Here's the thing. I don't like Quentin Tarantino camp. It's just dull to me. It's trying too hard. Meanwhile, when Bayonetta tries too hard, it's funny. I'm not going to talk about Bayonetta 2, but I watched the movies for Bayonetta 2, and I actually like the story there better than I did the first Bayonetta.
Yeah. They were still waiting.
Nintendo didn't own it.
Yep. And I wish that Platinum Games... Well, Platinum Games is probably still going to take a while before they get to Bayonetta 3, huh? Because they're
keep on talking about it, but you know, here's the thing. Bayonetta sold dick on the Nintendo console. Sold even worse on... Bayonetta 2 sold even worse. I mean, it was embarrassingly low. In some regions, they sold 5 figures.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And it's a pity because, you know, Bayonetta has is one of the most fun games I've played, and fun in terms of gameplay and in terms of story.
I don't foresee us getting anything out of Bayonetta 3 for a long time, not just because of that, but also because they just launched the Kickstarter for Wonderful 101 to be relaunched on other consoles.
Maybe Nintendo will go out of business and sell it to other people. I don't know. I know that's not going to happen, but, you know, I need my Bayonetta. At least MLB I'll be getting on the Xbox next year.
Yeah.
Bayonetta's not coming. It's not even coming to PC, which really irritates me.
Which, by the way, have either of you played Wonderful 101?
You know, I played a... I know an MMO that was something 101, but it was based on a magic school. Looking at it, it does not look familiar.
It's sort of like a successor to Beautiful Joe, from what I understand. Scott, have you played Wonderful 101?
I have not played Beautiful Joe, but I've heard of it, yes.
Oh, I mean, did you ever play Wonderful 101?
No, I haven't.
See, like, I've never talked to anyone that, like, had wonderful things to say about that game, but,
yeah,
like, that Kickstarter...
Yeah, Wonderful 101 looks exactly like Beautiful Joe, except in red and black.
And that's what I'm saying, is like, I have never heard anyone say anything cool about Wonderful 101, but that Kickstarter reached over $1 million in, like, minutes. It blows my mind how much people threw money at that thing as soon as that Kickstarter went up. And it's like, I guess Wonderful 101 fans have to exist because, wow, that thing made its money quick.
Yeah, it is always surprising what ideas just take off and get all this money, and I just don't. Yeah, I'm
by the way, you can
look
back at it. There's still 23 days to go on the Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah, the image looks like it's a co-op adventure sports game. I don't know. These pictures are weird.
Just because there's a football field doesn't mean it's a sports game.
Okay. I see a sword and football field and bunch of players. I don't know what's going on. Okay.
Yeah, Wonder Red and Wonder Blue and Wonder Yellow and Wonder.
Yeah, it's a wacky little game, but like, I gotta respect them for being cheeky with the Kickstarter too, because like Hideki Kamiya, he's notorious for blocking people on Twitter, and one of the tiers for the Wonderful 101 Kickstarter is that if you pledge enough, you can have the honor of being addressed by Hideki Kamiya on Twitter and then blocked by him.
So at least there's going to be a PC version of the remastered Wonderful 101. So there will be a PC version at the very least.
Yeah. Because the whole thing behind it is that they're like self-pub. The whole goal behind this Kickstarter is that Platinum Games wants to self-publish, and so this is the route they're taking with it.
Well, here's my attitude. I'm going to wait until it's actually on Steam before I even consider buying it, because Japanese developers and Kickstarter have not made a good partnership for the most part. I mean, the games that are released tend to end up like Mighty No. 9. Here's the thing I hope. Since it's a remaster, they won't have to work that much on it, you know? Because, hey, you know, Project Phoenix, it's coming out in 2020-something?
Probably never. 20 never.
And Shenmue 3 is a big, huge pile of dung. It is bad. And one thing I found out about it was that the developer, the guy who created it, never plays video games. It was the same thing with Shenmue and Shenmue 2. Yet a game made by a game doesn't like to play video games.
You know, Yakuza is a much better version of Shenmue 3 or Shenmue anything than Shenmue could ever hope to be anyways, so like, whatever. Yakuza adores being a video game, but also does all the things that Shenmue does, but better.
Yeah. I have to look up the Project Phoenix Kickstarter and see what date they have, what's it called, scheduled for that game. I know it's not Tiny Metal, which is the other project that he started. There we are, Japanese. Last updated in March 26, 2019. Okay, that's not a good sign.
Yeah. No, it's not. almost been a year.
There are over 11,000 comments on the Project Phoenix page, and you know what kind of comments there's going to be on that.
There's a lot of them demanding their money back.
I'm pretty sure of that, but I don't care about those. I'm thinking about the other comments they might have about the game.
Right.
Well, you know, I mean, great games have come with long delays, like Duke Nukem Forever.
And I think that was a disappointment, too, that one.
Yes,
or at least
it was.
I remember.
It was pretty bad. I mean, you could always say, well, look at Half-Life and Half-Life 2. Each of them took 8 years to make. But neither of them were kickstarted. You can think of Broken Age, even. The one that really broke blew the doors open on Kickstarter games, I mean... They sent him millions and millions of dollars, and he still had to early access it. And he still had to break the game in two. On the upside, I did like Broken Age. So, I mean, it's double fine. It's above average double fine, which is better than most games out there.
I think Pillars did good with Kickstarter.
Yeah, but here's the thing about that game is that they already had build going before they launched the Kickstarter. That's a lot of the problem with a lot of video game Kickstarters is that they're just concepts and people say, we want to make this kind of game. And people say, yeah, make this kind of game. Then they realize, oh, this is not going to be very fun. See, here's the thing about – let me give you an example. Sid Meier, he makes a lot of games that never see the light of day because he realizes it's just not fun. There was a dinosaur strategy game, you know, sort of like a Civilization dinosaur game that he gave up on after like – a couple of months because he realized this isn't going to work. But when you have a Kickstarter, you can't say this isn't going to work, I'm going to drop it, because people already paid for it.
Right. They're expecting something.
They're expecting that game that you promised to make. And here's the thing. If Mighty No. 9 never had a Kickstarter campaign, I'm pretty sure people would have really enjoyed it. It was average, and it was sort of fun, you know? But people would have had the sky-high expectations for it had it not been kickstarted. And, you know, and sometimes it works. I mean, what's the name of that game that's Bloodstained, which is – was it Bloodstained that was the basically the Mighty No. 9 for Castlevania? Bloodstained.
Which was made by the creator
of Castlevania, and he just made a Bloodstained, which is basically Castlevania, but updated.
Right, and she had this like crystal curse growing on her skin, and
Bloodstained. Did you, TJ?
I did not play through Bloodstained, but I do. Yeah. There are other versions of Castlevania that I've really enjoyed throughout history, but like I just wasn't into Bloodstained from the beginning.
Oh, okay, because it's gotten overwhelmingly positive reviews on Steam.
Yeah, I mean, it looks great, but it just doesn't look like my jam.
Okay. They released the DLC recently. So, yeah. Anyways, getting back to the thing, you know. I just, you know, if you're going to... Steam has the perfect DRM. You know, just online verification is fine. You know, every so often, just, you know, make sure that you know, it logs online and it checks you if you're going to have any DRM at all. Or just buy all your games from Good Old Games so you have no DRM ever. I remember that one time... Go ahead.
I was saying, I love Good Old Games. You can link your account with Steam and they'll... some games will be allowed to be, added to your GOG account if it's on Steam, which is a nice... thing, a nice feature.
Sometimes I would want to link it to Steam simply because it's all in one place, you know.
Right.
I just remember, what was the name of that game? The game with the goo. Oh, World of Goo? World of Goo just broke all of that because they just released it and said, you pay whatever you want. You know, some people bought it for a penny, but a lot of people bought it for the suggested price, and some people paid more for it. You know, because they were backing the creator, and sometimes I think that's the way to go.
Yeah,
for an indie
indie
thing, you know. And here's the thing about CD Projekt Red. Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be released without DRM. Because that's what CD Projekt Red does not believe in DRM. They released The Witcher 3 without DRM.
Oh, that's good then.
Yep.
It certainly makes playing the game easier. You don't have to have like a third platform thing open just to approve using the game. Because I know there are some games where even though it's on Steam, you're opening like a Jedi Fallen Order. Even though you have it on Steam, it's still opening up Origin in the background, and so you have basically both of those programs going.
Oh, check it out. There's an update available on Slay the Spire. hopefully that means that's the extra character. Mm-hmm. Sorry for that. I just noticed it. But yeah, I mean, there's not much more we can say. I mean, having DRM that shortens the lifespan of your solid-state drive is not very good DRM.
No.
And
that's terrible DRM.
Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If we enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week, and we promise this podcast won't have any DRM.
Yay.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.